Hello and welcome to the Walk Off, everybody. I'm Scott Belford, rolling solo today, normally joined by the best co-host in the biz, Adam Mack. He is under the weather, but we're carrying on without him. We're going to do a little mini episode, 20, 30 minutes, just going solo. Feel free to drop your comments, all of you, the grounds crew. We do appreciate you. And we try to get to all your interactions as well. We do our mailbag every Tuesday, a Monday morning mailbag on a Tuesday afternoon. You can always try and get your comments on that by reaching out to us on Twitter by DMing us at Walk Off Podcast. You can do the same thing on Instagram, The Walk Off Podcast, or you can join the Patreon. We always appreciate it. It's an extra $4 a month. You get extra programming. So MLB Mondays, every single Monday, bonus content. You also get to get a sneak peek of the TV show that we're writing called Around the Horn. We're going to need to call it something else, we're being told, but that's fine. But anyways, a little peek behind the curtain, if you will, to the making of a show. So that is also included every Wednesday. $4 a month gets you into that, and you get Discord. Okay, so we are spring training, and believe me, I am so excited for these 3 weeks to pass so that we are actually watching baseball that matters. That said, still lots going on. So we still got stuff to talk about. Manoah's shoulder soreness is going to be a problem. We'll get into it and what that means for this starting rotation. We got an update on Kevin Gausman and his, I don't want to call it an injury, but soreness, if you will, as well as Vladdy's middle finger injury. Again, not really an injury, but getting some time off because it's sore. Then we'll touch on Daniel Vogelbach. I'm starting to be convinced this guy is just going to make this team, and I think I'm all right with it. So we'll kind of get in to Danny Berger's numbers and the fact that I truly am starting to believe that he can replace Matt Chapman's offense. I know some of you are like, that's not hard, but still had to be done. So we'll break that down. Jeff Passan was a guest on Blair and Barker yesterday, and he predicted that the Blue Jays do not make the playoffs. Eric Swanson talks to the media for the first time since that travesty happened with his kid, his son getting hit by the car and being in intensive care. The good news is it looks like he's going to be going home in a day or two. So we'll quickly touch on that, get to the good news with Eric Swanson's son. And we'll end things off with the fact that MLB, the show, has given the option to players to use an avatar that is female, which of course is being met with a totally reasonable response from the internet. And being it's International Women's Day, I figured, hey, let's talk some of this MLB The Show avatar backlash. Okay. So let's start with Alek Manoah. Obviously, there were a ton of questions around Big Puma as it was 2023, just a horrendous season for the kid, a fall from grace. Right. I think that's what Blue Jays fans were most concerned about is between the ears, what's going on in the big cat's noodle? Because he went from third in Cy Young votes in 2022 to literally getting lit up by the Florida Coast League kids, right? So 2024 is huge. And you want it to go as smooth as it possibly can. He came into camp in very good shape. He definitely looked better than he did at the end of 2023. You never know when soreness is going to happen. And it unfortunately has happened. Alek Manoah has been shut down. They're hoping that he can start throwing baseballs again off the mound by the weekend and maybe get to the point where he can start ramping up and making starts by early next week. But this is still a big question mark. And when you start to look at the timeline and the fact that what are we at? Like 3 weeks until the season starts, it's not looking good for Alek Manoah and his hopes of making this starting rotation right out of camp. If he's not physically ready to go the last thing he should do, and the last thing this Blue Jays organization is going to allow him to do, is to try and fight through it, right? I think there was a little bit of soreness and some injury concerns last year, right, where the organization is going, well, we didn't see anything, and Alex going, well, I need shots in my shoulders, it's sore, and so on and so forth, and, you know, all those secondary opinions, because players with money, obviously their body is how they make that paycheck, so they're going to get a second opinion, they're going to look into it themselves. So there was already that kind of animosity between the two sides. So you hate to hear that he's dealing with any sort of soreness or injury. You wanted the spring to go as without a bump in the road as you could. Not the case. So what does that mean? Well, it means that Beauden Francis, who has looked very good this spring, I know he really impressed me yesterday in the first inning, loading the bases, giving up a run, and then shutting it down, right? There's a lot of guys you could just fall apart on that, but he made some really good pitches to get out of the inning, and then he continued to pitch three more innings. He's getting his pitches in. He's getting his innings in. He's built up to the point where he should be good to go for five or six innings come the start of the season. Listen, Beauden Francis was a guy that came over in that Rowdy Tellez deal. He was the prospect the Brewers threw in, right? Like, the reason the Jays made that trade at the time was for Trevor Richards. You might remember the bullpen was on fire and everything. This was 2021. The team was mashing. And then we had Tyler Chatwood and Tanner Roark and just literally a plethora, Rafael Dolis, of guys who just all of a sudden were being thrust into the limelight and were just crumbling. They needed somebody to stop the bleeding, so they moved Rowdy Tellez to Milwaukee to get Trevor Richards. They also made the move with Miami, right, to bring in Anthony Bass and Joe Panik, and I guess they moved Joe Panik for Anthony Bass is what it was, right? But they had to bolster their bullpen. Anyways, what I'm getting at is that Francis Beauden was a complete afterthought. And now he is going to be a major contributor in 2024. And he is going to be a guy who really could help make or break this season, right? Because we really are relying on Alek Manoah to rebound a little bit and take that fifth spot, or for Beauden Francis to be able to right the ship and be that guy. Ricky Tiedemann, you know his service time is going to be manipulated, right? That's just the way it's going to be. So he's not going to be available until May 1st, and I really do think that this organization is going to force him to prove he's ready. So he's going to make them force their hand, very similar to what Alek Manoah did in 2021, where he was just pitching so well, and when they needed a starter, he was just the obvious choice to bring up. So that's what they're going to do with Tiedemann. They're going to manipulate his service time. If they wait till May 1st, they get another year of arbitration out of him, which could wind up saving them, depending on how good Ricky winds up being, but it could save them $20 million. So of course, they're going to wait that 4 weeks before bringing up Tiedemann. We could wind up seeing guys like Connor Cook or Chad Dallas far before any of us expected to, because the starting rotation was just incredibly healthy last year. We're already seeing that that's probably not going to be the case in 2024. And it's going to be one of those scenarios where you cross your fingers and hope guys like Beauden Francis can get it done. I know we mentioned off the top of the show too, Kevin Gausman, old Gary G, Kevin Gausman also had some soreness in his arm. They have shut him down for the last few days, but the good news is, and let me get this, so the news regarding Kevin Gausman, definitely better than Alek Manoah. John Schneider said that the 33-year-old is trending in a good direction, and after playing catch Wednesday and Thursday, a long toss session is slated for Saturday with a bullpen session possible this weekend or early next week. But you start doing the math on this again, right? Like, we're only 3 weeks away from the start of the season. So there's almost no way he's going to be built up to a point where he can pitch five or six innings on opening day. Maybe Kevin Gausman doesn't get that opening day start. we'll see what happens, and it's all going to be based on health, but I think that really does show how important Bowden Francis is going to be in this starting rotation, especially in the month of April. You don't wish to fall too far behind the eight ball, and if this team is actually going to be a playoff team, they are going to need Bowden Francis to perform admirably at best, all right? At worst, I should say. Admirably at worst. Danny Burgers. Sorry. So Daniel Vogelbach. Listen, I was incredibly disappointed when they signed him. And maybe that's the wrong way of framing it. I wasn't disappointed they signed Daniel Vogelbach to a minor league deal. I'm never going to let minor league deals get under my craw. But what did upset me is that I felt they should have gone out and signed a JD Martinez. I still kind of do. So Vogelbach really felt like they were just trying to fill a hole cheaply, which in a contention window, you're like, what the hell are you doing? I still sort of feel that way. But honestly, man, Vogelbach has impressed me over the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks of spring training here. Got to see him hit a couple bombs live when my wife and I were in Dunedin. We watched him hit a big bomb off Andrew Chafin yesterday in Lakeland against the Tigers. The guy is showing that power that the organization went out and got, right? This is why Atkins and Shapiro were like, let's take a flyer on Vogelbach. He's been in the clubhouse before, right? There was that short stint in 2021 when they went out and got Danny. Then they let him, they let him go. They released him. He looked good in a Mets uniform, but he's a true three outcome guy. And I think that's one thing to remember with him. So this is where I'm going to frame this. I do like Daniel Vogelbach, and I am starting to warm up to the idea of him making this team and being a contributor off the bench and in a DH role. And I do think that he can literally replace Matt Chapman's production from last year. And I know a lot of you are probably like, well, that's not hard to do. But you know what? He truly could... Given the opportunity, he could replace Matt Chapman's offense, but in a much more effective way. So like Chapman was in the lineup every single day. I don't think Vogelbach to get the same amount of home runs and RBIs. He might play 3/4 to 2/3 of the games Matt Chapman did last year. I still think Chapman is going to regress to his career average, which I know a lot of you will be like, well, that's still not that great. It's not that great, but damn, is it ever better than what we saw from him between May and September. Just a reminder here, I did pull up his numbers. Where is this? Okay, so these are Matt Chapman's numbers after April in 113 games. That's 467 plate appearances. He had 12 home runs, 33 RBIs, 139 strikeouts, a .205 batting average, and an OPS of .652. Pretty ugly. And if you listen to those numbers, I think Danny Vogelbach is going to far surpass that production. And the nice thing with Vogelbach is that you really do have the option of putting him in the best places for him to succeed. Whereas you were leaning on Matt Chapman 100% of the time, whether it was not a good position for him to be in or not, there wasn't really another option there. Danny, you can really kind of pick and choose when you put him in the lineup, right? Because he probably is a DH at best. Like, you're not going to get any time out of the field with him. So what's going to happen if he does make this team is you're going to see Justin Turner playing some third base. You're going to see Justin Turner playing some first base. You are going to see IKF playing some outfield. You're going to watch these guys kind of merry-go-round throughout the different positions on the field, trying to fit in Danny Burgers where it best suits him, right? But having a guy who has 30 home run power in the middle of this lineup, dear God, it is what this team has lacked. And you know what? I know spring training, small sample size so far, but as Adam Mack always says, good small sample size, always better than a bad small sample size. And that is what Vogelbach has given us to this point. So here's the list of the spring training OPS leaders for the Blue Jays. Nathan Lucas putting a nice little spring training together for himself and definitely making an argument to maybe be that fourth outfielder for the Blue Jays, a hole that is still missing. And then if you do look at the OPS leaders, like I said, Nathan Lucas at the top with a 1303 OPS, Vogelbach number two, a 1233, Vladdy Guerrero with a 1037, Justin Turner 1017, IKF 950, Ernie Clement 900. Ernie Clement's another guy definitely making an argument for himself to be that bench bat, a guy to probably replace Santiago Espinal, who his OPS in spring so far has been a 578. The only one that's worse is Eduardo Escobar, who's hitting 272. That's his OPS. I mean, that's not even great for his batting average, but definitely abysmal for his OPS. And I know small sample size, I know spring is all about getting your swing together and getting into that game shape. But again, to reiterate what Adam Mack says, good small sample size. Give it to me every time. Mentioning IKF, I do think that they are going to find ways to get Vogelbach into the lineup, and I think this is going to affect IKF and where he plays, right? I know a lot of people have him pegged at third base, and he is going to get his fair share of time at the hot corner, but I do think that we could see him at second base a substantial amount of time. I think we could see him out in left field for 30 games next year. I think that's absolutely a possibility. His numbers in spring so far, he only has 12 at bats, so really tough to really put any sort of stock into this. But again, small sample size, pretty decent small sample size. He has 5 hits. He's got 2 RBIs, a walk, a strikeout, a stolen base, batting average of 417, and an OPS of 950, so not too shabby. Okay, let's move on here to Jeff Passan, ESPN analyst and probably the most respected analyst in baseball across the U.S. anyways. He joined Blair and Barker yesterday and was asked straight up, do you think that this Blue Jays team is a playoff team? And his answer, it didn't surprise me. I saw it coming, but to hear it out of somebody as knowledgeable's mouth as Jeff Passan, it hurt. And his answer was pretty much, no. If he had to predict if the Blue Jays make the playoffs, he does not think that they are going to do it. And he did qualify. He said, listen, this could be recency bias. He's like, had you asked me a week ago before Manoah and Gausman had their shoulder soreness and their injuries, he probably would have leaned towards them making the playoffs. He also stated that Ricky Tiedemann not having a clean spring was a concern. He really figured that if Ricky Tiedemann could get through without any sort of impediments or shutdowns, that that would really increase the Blue Jays' chances of making the playoffs. He also stated that he finds that the American League is a lot more parity across the American League. Right, there's a lot of very good teams in the American League, but there aren't any super teams. There aren't any Atlanta Braves or Los Angeles Dodgers that are just going to run away with their divisions, right? You look at the AL West, Passan stated he feels one team minimum. Well, he just made the statement of like the AL West, one team has to come out of there. One team has to come out of the AL Central. And with how good the AL West was last year, it should be concerning to the Blue Jays because the AL East is such a meat grinder. He said that he feels the Baltimore Orioles are better than the Blue Jays. They probably are. I mean, you just look at that team on paper and what they did last year. It's tough to argue with that. The only place that the Blue Jays might have a slight advantage on the Orioles is pitching. And you know what? Corbin Burnes being added to that rotation definitely helps the Orioles, adding a stud at the top of your starting rotation. Like, they're pitching. They won in spite of their pitching last year. And now having a true stopper, a real guy who, like, if they go on a three-game slide and it comes to Corbin, like, it's over. Burns is one of the best starters in all of baseball. So, obviously, the Orioles being picked to win the AL East by passing, not all that surprising. He said that he feels the Yankees are just slightly better than the Blue Jays, but could see an injury or two and them being in a dogfight between the two of them. And he's like, the wild card is the Rays. He's like, they're always a big question mark there. So, really interesting to hear Jeff Passan say that he doesn't think that the Blue Jays are a playoff team right now at this moment. And I mean, you guys know this show is all about toxic positivity. Adam and I always skew a little bit positive because it's just how I like to watch my baseball. I like to watch it with some hope in my heart. But it's tough, man, to look at this team and not be like, they're still missing something. They're trying to find lightning in a bottle with a guy like Daniel Vogelbach that we spent 10 minutes talking about. And I still feel like they probably should go out and get a JD Martinez. I know how many DHs can a team have, but this team still lacks an offensive prowess that I think you need outside help to get. I mean, I'm right there with you guys. Cross our fingers. Maybe a dude like Addison Barger just freaking breaks, right? You never know what's going to happen. You're never the future is not ours to see. Case Sarah, Sarah, right? To get real old timey on you there. So spring training, we might as well be as hopeful as we can. But yeah, hearing Jeff Passan talk about the Blue Jays playoff chances, and again, he was very upfront with he would not be shocked at all if the Blue Jays win 95 wins. So, I mean, in one breath, he's saying the Blue Jays won't make the playoffs, but also it won't shock him at all if they are the best team in the AL East, pretty much. So time will tell, and we'll see what happens. Drop your comments below, Grounds Crew. Would love to hear what you think about this team's playoff chances, where they are in the AL East. We'll tackle this in mailbag on Tuesday. And kind of what I'll do is I'll break down. I'll keep track of yes, playoff team, maybe a playoff team, no chance of a playoff team. And we'll kind of give the pie graph, if you will, of Blue Jays fandom and our belief in our boys. Okay, so let's move on to some good news. Eric Swanson got to talk to the media for the first time since Toby was hit by a vehicle. His little four-year-old boy in Clearwater. We're all aware of the bummer that is. All of us very heartfelt in our wishes in his recovery. And the good news is that he sat down with Keegan Mathieson and some of the other media members yesterday morning, I think it was. And pretty much Toby's getting out of the hospital in the next day or two. It looks like he's going to 100% recover. God, kids are so freaking resilient, eh? Like, it's just, anyways, my heart grows two times the size for Toby Swanson and the Swanson family. It really is. It just makes me smile. It's like, thank goodness that things worked out that way. All the best to Toby. I know the boys on Gate 14 were like, Toby Swanson's got to throw out the first pitch. That would be awesome. I would love to see that on opening day in Toronto. Toby Swanson on the mound, throwing out the first pitch, if he's feeling well enough, obviously. But some good news there, just hearing that Toby is going to be okay, is going to recover, and that the Swanson family can go back to a much more fun thing to do than worrying about your son, right? Getting ready for a baseball season and playing a game. So all the best to Toby Swanson and the Swanson family. Very cool that they basically got given good news and things worked out for them. Could have went a lot worse. Okay, I know that this has been a little bit of a mini episode. Adam, again, apologizes that he couldn't make it. He is under the weather, but I figured that I'd take the helm here and drive the ship solo. Appreciate you folks watching and following along here. We are going to end this on International Women's Day talking about MLB The Show. They made a very cool feature this year where you can actually make your avatar a woman, which of course the internet then was very reasonable with their response and was like, this is cool. Obviously, none of us have negative things to say. Obviously, this is not how the internet works. And there was a bunch of backlash about this is so fake, which is hilarious because if you played the show, the different features they have, I mean, let's face it, they are not staying in reality. And just having a woman as an avatar should not be something to get upset about. But I found something out yesterday that I figured I'd share with you. Again, for International Women's Day, I thought it was cool. Friend of the show and a Patreon member, Mish Beer, she's always in the comments section. Some of you might remember her from Long Toss, right? When we would do our live long tosses and you would guys would get into the comment section and let us know what we should be talking about and how you're feeling about things. We are, by the way, going to start long toss back up, hopefully beginning of April. So mark it in the calendar. We'll be doing that every single Sunday is the dream, having content creators from around the league and around Blue Jays land on. We're excited to have Baseball Jen back with us. We'll be reaching out to plenty of our fellow podcasters, guys like Johnny G and Avery, and we'll get Connor and Brant back from the flight deck. You know, some of our favorites. Anyways, I'm going off on a tangent here about long toss. What I'm going to say, though, is that Mish Beer posted something on Twitter that I thought was really cool, which basically there was a comment by some loser. I'll just say it that way. Just some loser directed at women of basically the comment was stay out of our game or something like that. But Mish pointed out a tweet from this Heather Linnington Noble. Okay. And she had a very cool, not stat, but little tidbit about take me out to the ball game. And so she says, take me out to the ball game is literally about a woman who is obsessed with baseball. So don't give me this baseball is a man's hobby bollocks. And it's something I had no idea. So she posted the full take me out to the ball game lyrics. And this is, I'm going to read you it here. And it's pretty cool because I had no idea that this was a song about a woman who was obsessed with baseball. So it goes, Katie Casey was baseball mad. Had the fever and had it bad. Just to root for the hometown crew, every soul, Katie Blue. On a Saturday, her young beau called to see if she'd like to go to see a show. But Miss Kate said, no, I'll tell you what you can do. And then it's take me out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care if we ever get back. For it's 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out. At the old ball game, and then this is how it ends. Katie Cassie saw all the games, knew the players by their full names, told the umpire he was wrong all along, good and strong. When the score was just 2-2, Katie Cassie knew what to do just to cheer up the boys she knew. She made the gang sing this song, take me out to the ball game. Anyways, I had no idea that that song was about an obsessed woman with baseball, and kind of cool to hear the whole, like, full lyrics behind a song that I drunkenly get up and sing with all my heart every seventh inning stretch when I'm at a ball game. Anyways, folks, let's wrap it up there. Thank you so much for following along. Little tidbit here. If you are in Ottawa, I'm actually also in Ottawa. I am playing the Laugh Lounge. I'm headlining that club in the market tonight at 8, tomorrow at 8. Come on out. Support local comedy, Ottawa folks. Come and check out a show. It will be really good. It's honestly one of the best comedy clubs in the city. I always enjoy playing it. You can get your tickets. I'll post the link in the comments. Take care, everybody. Cheers.